welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Kia ora, Bryce. How are you this morning?
Maureen O'Sara. I'm very good. Things are settling down in politics. We're off into the election campaign. So, yeah. I don't know, it's been chaotic, but things are getting back to normal, I think.
It has been chaotic. The kind of lockdown 2.0, did that mean that you were working a bit less than usual, or in the lead up to the election as busy as ever?
No, just, I don't know, everything's chaotic actually. No, working a lot. Since going into 2.5 for Auckland at least, had Aucklanders coming down to visit. So it's all been a bit strange. And that's kind of been one of the big debates. Should Aucklanders be allowed out of Auckland? And they seem to be spreading around. So
yeah.
So far, so good. But it is one of the big issues on the kind of COVID debate now about whether the government's, you know, taken Auckland to the right level and whether those travel restrictions are right and whether the messaging is right to Aucklanders, because, you know, you guys are travelling to Queenstown for
conferences
and all sorts of things.
And it is odd because the people who are travelling, it's kind of for their mental health more than it is for any kind of business or economy reason, which is, I'm guessing, the reason why Aucklanders are allowed to travel in and out of the city? Have I got that wrong?
Yeah. No, eventually they have to be allowed out. And, for all sorts of reasons, I think, you know, the government's having to get across that message that Aucklanders should still, you know, keep to that same sort of mentality that they had before the lockdown went, or the levels went down, and be careful. So I think it is the right decision, but it's just a bit of uncertainty, I think, that a lot of New Zealanders have about the situation, and for Aucklanders about whether they should be going or not, whether it should be essential travel,
yes,
or yes, for mental health and for, yeah, for, I guess, holidays and things.
Yes, that there's always going to be a certain type of person, unfortunately, who puts everything in the car and tries to go to the holiday home.
indeed. This whole pandemic, it's been a very difficult one for politicians and the government to navigate. And, you know, we've seen a lot of slip-ups here and there.
Mm.
And, you know, there's a big debate about how much we should be hassling the government about that and whether how much we should be focusing on some of those mistakes. I think the media's done a good job of scrutinising those things. But I don't think they have been too harsh. But on the other hand, you know, we also have to keep in mind that generally, you know, things have been achieved and we do have what is a first-rate response to this crisis. And that's been acknowledged, I think, today. I think it's Joseph Stiglitz, the leading world economist, has come out and said, you know, New Zealand is the opposite of the US, essentially, and
wow,
handled this the best in the world. And I think that is still worth remembering.
That's nice praise. It was, speaking of people who are looking kind of with some objectivity at the whole palaver, the Select Health Committee has resumed. For the uninitiated, what does that exactly mean?
Well, it's, you know, select committees are those parts of Parliament where the light subcommittees of Parliament that are on focused on special topics. This one, of course, is focused on the special topic of how to deal with the pandemic.
Right.
And it means that you've got the MPs from all the political parties, essentially, that are able to scrutinise not just the government in terms of the politicians of government, but also the bureaucrats, and call them, you know, into the committee and ask them. And so they've had the Director General, St. Ashley Bloomfield, in there, and they've been asking him some hard questions.
Right.
And rightly so. This guy is, you know, making some really important decisions. He's, you know, he's got those responsibilities. He paid the big money. And National are sort of starting to concentrate a bit more on him.
Right.
And, of course, they've got their own reasons, which are, you know, what oppositions do. They try to, you know, create headlines and find flaws
totally
in what the government's doing. And maybe that's self-serving in lots of ways. So, you know, I think we can be critical about what their motives are, but it is necessary. And I think it is, it does serve us well to have that committee asking the hard questions and trying to find where the government's tripping up. And they clearly have tripped up in some areas.
Right.
So it's good that that committee has come back into life.
Totally. How else do we learn from our mistakes? One of the things that did seem to come out of the committee resuming yesterday was Director General of Health, Dr. Ashley Bloomfield, saying that Auckland may very well be in level 2 as opposed to level 2.5 for longer than people are assuming. It's not going to be a move down to 1, it's going to be a move down just to 2. So, in effect, that is just what the limit on public gatherings and funerals and tangihanga?
That's my understanding. It means that, 2's not so bad. We've had, obviously in Wellington and the rest of the country, that's what we've had. And mostly it's just about those large gatherings.
Yes.
There's still going to be the mask wearing on various locations, such as public transport. It does look like that's what we're going to have for some time, even in the rest of the country. So, but we've actually got a cabinet meeting tomorrow. Unusually, cabinet's reconvening in Wellington tomorrow, and they are going to be looking at this question. But yes, I think we can expect to have at least Auckland, if not the rest of the country, in level 2 for quite some time. And yeah, it's difficult, but I think it's probably the right decision for the moment.
Right. Speaking of, as we were just before, about people's feet being held to the flame and acknowledging mistakes, there has been a great deal of ink spilled over James Shaw's decision to fund a green school. Where are we at with this? Every time he seems to make comment on it, it flares up again. Was it a mistake? Is he standing by it? Is the school still going to get funded? Where are we at with this whole deal?
Yeah, I mean, this is a story that just rolls on. And
yeah.
I've actually been quite amazed how long it just keeps on going on. And it is because new information comes out day by day on it. And that's what keeps stories alive, frankly. And so, we keep on finding out more about the decision-making process that went on, and we're finding out that James Shaw, essentially really did push hard for this 12.
Yeah, it was a deal-breaker, wasn't it?
It was a deal-breaker, and he was holding up, signing off on other contracts, essentially, being awarded by the government. And so what's quite interesting in this is that obviously there's leaks from within the system, essentially from the Beehive, about this. And it suggests that Shaw really does have some enemies, potentially in his own party. Not surprising, because he's from a particular faction in the party, the more sort of centrist, mainstream part of the party, and some of his own MPs or maybe even staff might have some grievances there. But I wouldn't have thought they'd be leaking in such a way that might bring down the whole party. Whereas, because there really is that possibility that the Greens, as a result of this, could slip further down in the polls and below 5%.
Yeah, it's caused a lot of friction.
But I think we do have to look at the possibility that there's others in the Beehive, other political parties, probably Labour or more likely New Zealand First, that are leaking this information. And, no love lost between the Greens and New Zealand First. So I think it's most likely to be New Zealand First that are trying to put a bomb in there against their opponents. But Labour, likewise, seem to be, I don't know about happy about this, but sometimes they look a bit gleeful that it's James Shaw that's having to field these the scandal and not themselves.
Right.
And there's obviously some bitterness behind the scenes that that is part of the picture, I think. So it really is a very unfortunate timing for the Greens. It's 44 days now until the election, and you remember that there's a bit of deja vu going on here, because it was 45 days before the last election that Materia Ture resigned after her own scandal, and that really did cause some problems for the Greens as well. So this time around, there really is that chance of the Greens being out of Parliament, not just because of this, but I think because of some other maybe identity crisis problems in the Greens. that people aren't really sure what they stand for anymore, whether they've achieved enough in government. And this is kind of like the icing on the cake.
It is being reported on in a very emotive way, though. Like, it's not taking education funding away from other schools. This came out of infrastructure funding. What exactly is a shovel-ready project?
That's right. So, of course, this is coming from a $3 billion fund that is supposed to be about finding contracts that can be awarded that's going to increase things like the infrastructure, the public good of the nation, but most importantly can get economic activity going, can provide jobs. And so that's the lens that was looked at for this contract by James Shaw. Will this, you know, provide a good piece of, you know, improvement for the country and create some jobs, you know, quickly? And he decided that it did. And so it came from that pot of funding that might have otherwise gone into roading or, you know, some other rebuild elements. It's not out of the education pot. But nonetheless, you know, it still contravened the Green Party policy that they don't want more funds going
to private schools.
It does seem to be a key issue of principle here, even though you can argue that the dollars aren't that much in the greater scheme of things. Maybe it's just pragmatic, but it's not so much in the end that the Greens should be worried about what National thinks of this or voters on the right. In the end, it's Green supporters themselves that have to judge this.
Yes.
And it's them that are, I think, the most upset. You know, if you look at some of the former Green MPs like Catherine Delahunty, Sue Bradford, Mojo Mavers, they are really upset about this. They feel that it's a betrayal of those principles.
Oh, wow. Things are getting really mucky out there in the lead up to the election. I could talk about this with you all day, but unfortunately I'm not allowed. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning, Bryce Edwards.
Thanks, Sarah.
Talk to you again soon.
Cheers.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.